Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, January 26th, 2026. Beginning with the front page, Children's Discovery Museum. Pasta meets power of play. Play club session with noodles teaches kids STEAM concepts by D. Jack Alare. Normal. Undeterred by the oppressive weather Saturday morning, three youngsters found themselves on the third floor of the Children's Discovery Museum, learning about one of life's most versatile foods, pasta. It's so ubiquitous, right? Pasta is something that's in their everyday lives, so it's immediately accessible and relatable to them, said Libby Torbeck, mother of two-year-old David. David was joined by three-year-old Leon Itzkovich and four-year-old Alice Erickson, where they created paintings with spaghetti, used Play-Doh to form pasta shapes, and made macaroni art, among other pasta-themed fun. Pasta play, as the structured session was called, is part of Play Club at the museum. But it is more than simply learning the names of pasta shapes like farfalle, fusilli, and ravioli. The little ones were learning how to learn by playing, said Emily Serapin, programs educator at the museum and leader of Play Club. Learning through the power of play is so important for kids because that's how they learn, especially at this age. Every subject is learned through playing and experimentation, Serapin said. They're just kind of setting all those boundaries in their head at this point. So play is important. Play Club is a new program this year, a combination of two previous programs for kids ages 2 to 4, Play, Learn, and Grow for parents, and then Early Explorers for 4 and 5-year-olds, Serapin said. We decided to mash them together and create Play Club, she said. Now it's for grown-ups with their kids, and it's for kids 2 to 5. At this age, kids are not fully socialized and are much more comfortable with their parents in social settings, Serapin said. Learning through play alongside their parents helps introduce them to the school concept with teachers and learning centers, but with their parents, she said. And it's just a great time for parents to spend some really fun, educational, quality time with their kids. Even though the children are playing, they are learning concepts key to subjects in science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics, STEAM, Serapin said. Play Club has a new theme each month and starts every session with a greeting and song, including guided physical movements, before Serapin reads to the group. Unlike most daycares, where parents drop off their kids and leave, Play Club lets parents see how their children interact with other kids and teachers, said Angela Wu, mother of Leon. This will give me a venue to see how he's doing in the group or circle time sitting, Wu said. While Leon is just still a little behind on speech and a bit shy, the Discovery Museum has plenty of options where he excels in using his hands. He definitely has so many choices here, Wu said. Definitely got his interest for quite a period of time. And he really likes the hands-on things. In fact, it only took one visit for Wu to sign them up for an annual membership, she said. Torpek started her membership over the holidays, but was even more excited when she found Play Club, she said. I was like, oh my gosh, there's a Play Club. Oh my gosh, they're doing STEM and STEAM, Torpek said. It's a chance to learn how to be in a room with other kids with some structure. I signed us up immediately. I'm thrilled. And so far, I've been really, really impressed with Emily, Serapin. The final session for Pasta Play is from 10 to 11 a.m. on Monday, January 26th. That's today. The theme for February is Smart Cookies, and the first session is from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, February 18th. Registration links can be found online at www.childrensdiscovery-museum.net/284/CLAY-CLUB. Besides Play Club, Serapin is also working on new pop-up programs while the second floor of the museum is being renovated, she said. For a calendar of events and to learn about how to become a member at the Children's Discovery Museum, visit childrensdiscoverymuseum.net. Also from the front page, some GOP uneased by ICE tactics. Oklahoma Governor, Americans don't like what they're seeing. By Stephen Sloan, Associated Press. A handful of Republicans expressed growing concerns Sunday about the tactics that federal immigration officials are using in Minnesota after a U.S. Border Patrol agent fatally shot a man in Minneapolis. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt said the killing Saturday of Alex Preddy, a 37-year-old intensive care unit nurse who protested President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown, was a real tragedy. Preddy was a U.S. citizen, born in Illinois. I think the death of Americans, what we're seeing on TV, it's causing deep concerns over federal tactics and accountability, Stitt told CNN's State of the Union. Americans don't like what they're seeing right now. When he asked if he thought the president should pull immigration agents from Minnesota, Stitt said Trump has to answer that question. He's getting real bad advice right now, Stitt said. The governor said the Republican president needed to tell the American people what the solution and end game are, and that there needed to be solutions instead of politicizing the situation. Right now, tempers are just going crazy, and we need to calm this down, Stitt said. Other Republicans, including Senators Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, also conveyed unease. In a social media post, Cassidy called the shooting incredibly disturbing and that the credibility of ICE and DHS are at stake. Tillis urged a thorough and impartial investigation. Any administration official who rushes to judgment and tries to shut down an investigation before it begins are doing an incredible disservice to the nation and to President Trump's legacy, Tillis said in a post. Administration officials were firm in their defense of the hard-line immigration tactics. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said, "It's a tragedy when anyone dies," but he blamed Democratic leaders in Minnesota for fomenting chaos. There are a lot of paid agitators who are ginning things up, and the governor has not done a good job of tamping this down, Bessent said on ABC's This Week. Meanwhile, Democrats demanded federal immigration officials leave Minnesota after Saturday's fatal shooting. Federal officials say agents fired defensively Saturday morning when Preddy stepped into a confrontation between an immigration officer and a woman on the street. Officials say Preddy was armed, but no bystander videos appear to show him holding a weapon. The Minneapolis police chief said Preddy had a permit to carry a gun. Preddy's family said they were heartbroken but also very angry at authorities, saying in a statement that Preddy was a kind-hearted soul who wanted to make a difference in the world. A federal judge already issued an order blocking the Trump administration from destroying or altering evidence related to the shooting after state and county officials sued. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said during a news conference that Preddy showed up to impede a law enforcement operation. She questioned why he was armed, but did not offer details about whether Preddy drew the weapon or brandished it at officers. But gun rights groups noted it's legal to carry firearms during protest. Every peaceable Minnesotan has the right to keep and bear arms, including while attending protests, acting as observers, or exercising their First Amendment rights, the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus said in a statement. These rights do not disappear when someone is lawfully armed. Demonstrations broke out in several cities across the country, including New York, Washington, and Los Angeles. Preddy's family was furious at federal officers' description of the shooting. The sickening lies told about our son by the administration are reprehensible and disgusting. Alex is clearly not holding a gun when attacked by Trump's murdering and cowardly ICE thugs. He had his phone in his right hand, and his empty left hand is raised above his head while trying to protect the woman ICE just pushed down, all while being pepper sprayed, the family statement said. Please get the truth out about our son. He was a good man. In Minneapolis, protesters converged at the scene of the shooting, despite dangerously cold weather, with temperatures around minus 6 degrees. An angry crowd gathered after the shooting and screamed at federal officers, calling them cowards and telling them to go home. Protesters grabbed garbage bins from the alleyways to block streets and preserve proof, and people chanted, "ICE out now," and observing ICE is not a crime. As darkness fell, hundreds of people mourned quietly by a growing memorial at the site of a shooting. A donut shop and nearby clothing store stayed open, offering protesters a warm place, as well as water, coffee, and snacks. Caleb Spike said he came from a nearby suburb to show his support and his frustration. It seems like every day something crazier happens, he said. What's happening in our community is wrong. It's sickening. It's disgusting. Turning to page 2, today's Flick Fact by Bill Flick. Question. While in town in 2002 for a performance at Illinois State University, can you name the TV star who hailed a cab from his room at the Chateau Hotel, got in along with a production assistant, and simply said to the cabbie, "It's our first time here. Just take us somewhere fun." Answer, it was Jimmy Fallon. And where, you might wonder, did the cabbie take him? Luca Grill, downtown. And it must have been fun. The next night, after his show at Braden Auditorium, Fallon hopped another cab and went back to the Luca for another night. How time flies. 100 years ago, January 26, 1926, the second night of the International Radio Test Week, with European stations broadcasting, proved a failure as far as Bloomington radio fans were concerned. However, the air was literally filled with telegraph code messages and SOS signals from ships in distress in the big storm over the Atlantic last night. 75 years ago, January 26th, 1951, the city council approved annexing residences on Sunset Road and two other properties on Moore Street and Castle Avenue. 50 years ago, 1976, Twin City residents may experience the fifth below zero temperature of the month. Temperatures fell below zero only two times during 1975. Predictions are for a low of 5 below to 5 above zero. 25 years ago, 2001, if there's a signature on the upcoming budget, said Bloomington City Manager Tom Hamilton, it is parks. More visible to the public will be a secondary signature, roads. The budget includes widening the Towanda-Emerson-Fairview intersection and converting it from a four-way stop to a signalized intersection. City Council members will hear a staff presentation on the proposed budget starting January 29th at City Hall. The budget shows a projected general fund increase of 6% from $48 million to $51 million. About half of that increase reflects yet-to-be-defined spending to develop the northeast corner of downtown into a cultural center. The overall budget should be about the same as last year's $101 million. From page 3, state news. Legionnaires case confirmed. More tests underway at Adult Development Center by Beth Hunsdorfer, Capital News, Illinois. The Illinois Department of Public Health has confirmed a case of Legionnaire's disease at the state-run Shapiro Developmental Center in Kankakee, Capital News, Illinois, has learned. In a joint statement from IDPH and the Illinois Department of Human Services released, the agencies confirmed a single case at Shapiro Center, home to adults with intellectual or developmental disabilities. Immediate control measures were taken to restrict use of potential sources of exposure, and testing those sources is underway. Those test results are still pending. IDPH and IDHS continue to work with facility staff to ensure all appropriate safety measures are implemented, including monitoring staff and symptoms for symptoms of Legionnaire's disease and prompt testing as needed. The state declined to comment on the condition of the Shapiro resident, who tested positive, citing patient confidentiality. Legionnaire's disease is a serious type of pneumonia called by Legionella bacteria, treatable by antibiotics, according to the Centers for Disease Control. Symptoms include cough, fever, headaches, muscle ache, and shortness of breath. Other symptoms such as confusion, diarrhea, or nausea can also occur. Although most healthy people who are exposed to Legionella bacteria don't get sick, older people, smokers, or those with weakened immune systems can develop symptoms. It can result in lung failure or death. Shapiro is home to 464 adults with intellectual or developmental disabilities, with 44% considered profoundly disabled and 86% on a behavior intervention program. Shapiro Center serves people who exhibit severe behavioral problems, have significant medical issues, and are medically fragile, according to the DHS website. About 1 in 10 people who contract Legionnaire's disease will die due to complications from their illness, according to the CDC. But for those who live in a healthcare facility, the rate of death increases to 1 in 4. Illinois experienced a previous outbreak of Legionnaire's disease from a state-operated facility in 2015. From 2015 to 2018, the Illinois Veterans Home at Quincy faced deadly Legionnaire's disease outbreaks, killing 13 residents. This is the latest blow to Illinois state-operated developmental centers. In 2023, CNI and ProPublica investigated reports of abuse and neglect at the Choate Mental Health and Developmental Center in deep southern Illinois, as well as other problems at state-operated developmental centers. Last year, the U.S. Department of Justice opened an investigation into Choate, as well as the Jack Mabley Developmental Center in Dixon and the Shapiro Developmental Center. 3 of the 7 state-operated residential institutions operated by IDHS. The investigation was to prove Illinois' treatment of people with developmental disabilities, examining whether the state provides adequate resources for community living and protects residents from harm in public institutions. Illinois continues to have one of the highest rates of institutionalization of people with intellectual or developmental disabilities in the United States. There are presently about 1,500 living in 7 state-operated developmental centers. Shapiro has the largest number of individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities, according to census data provided by the Illinois Department of Human Services. Turning to the sports section of the Pantograph for Monday, January 26th, Section B, college basketball, Illinois State. Redbirds fall short. ISU make big comeback on road against Belmont, but slips to 6-4 in Missouri Valley Conference. By Randy Reinhardt. Nashville, Tennessee. The Illinois State men's basketball team erased a 14-point first-half deficit, but could not make a second-half shortfall disappear in an 80-69 Missouri Valley Conference loss to Belmont on Saturday at Curb Event Center. The Redbirds slipped to 14-7 overall and 6-4 in the MVC in a game that was moved up a day from its originally scheduled Sunday start because of wintry weather in the area. Belmont's 5th straight win boosted the Bruins to 18-3 and 8-2 in Valley play. ISU trailed by as many as 14 in the first half, 37-23, but trimmed the Belmont advantage to 8 at 44-36 entering halftime. The Redbirds took their first lead at 48-47 on a Ty Pence jumper and led 56-52 when Johnny Kinsinger collected on a three-pointer at the 13-39 mark. But Belmont struck back with a 14-2 run, capped by an Ian Dillon three-pointer, and held a 66-58 edge with 8:01 left. Visiting ISU could not get closer than 5 the rest of the way. A 6'9" freshman from Peoria, Notre Dame, Dillon hit 4 of 5 from beyond the arc, and led the Bruins with 16 points. Jabez Jenkins added 14 points, and Tyler Lundblade 11 for Belmont, which shot 58% from the field and 56% from three-point range. Kinsinger topped the Redbirds with 13 points. Pence and Chase Walker chipped in 12 each, and Tariq Coleman and Bowden Skunberg supplied 10 apiece. ISU shot 38% from the floor, but only 29% from long range, hitting only 8 of 28 three-point tries. The Redbirds out-rebounded Belmont 36-28, getting 8 boards from Walker and 6 from Pence. Also from page B1, Keaton Wagler, Take a Bow by Bob Asmussen, The News Gazette. West Lafayette, Indiana. In my 37 years at the News Gazette, I have covered a Final Four team, a string of All-Americans, and NBA first-round draft picks. But nobody has ever been as good for one game as Keaton Wagler was on Saturday at Mackey Arena when he dropped 46 points to lead number 11 Illinois to an 88-82 win against number 4 Purdue. That's right, 46 points by an under-recruited rookie who now has everyone's attention. The Kansas native, Bill Self Let One Get Away, is a lock for Big Ten Freshman of the Year and First Team All-Conference. He just smashed the Illinois freshman scoring record by double digits. Georgie Beschlavini had the previous record of 35 points in 2019. It's a great achievement for me personally, Wagler said, but for me, I'm happy, super happy that we came in here. We stuck together, played tough, and ended up getting the win. Wagler is the best player on a top 10 team with real national title aspirations. He even said so after dropping 46 on the Boilermakers. The ceiling is national championship, Wagler said. That's our goal. That's been our goal since the beginning. The only downside for Illinois, the NBA noticed, like Will Riley and Kasperis Jakunius after last season, Wagler is going to be one and done in Champaign-Urbana. But Riley and Jakunius came to town with mountains of hype. Wagler was able to settle in, figure out college, and then shock everyone but his teammates and coaches, who knew what was coming. Illinois fans can lament his early departure. A better idea, enjoy Wagler while he is around. Celebrate his record night and plan for the next one. Turning to national and world news, the Digest. Carney, no plans for free trade with China. Toronto. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said Sunday his country has no intention of pursuing a free trade deal with China. He was responding to U.S. President Donald Trump's threats to impose a 100% tariff on goods imported from Canada if America's northern neighbor went ahead with a trade deal with Beijing. Carney said his recent agreement with China merely reduces tariffs on a few sectors that were recently hit with tariffs. Trump claims otherwise, posting that China is successfully and completely taking over the once great country of Canada. So sad to see it happen. I only hope they leave ice hockey alone, President DJT. The Prime Minister said that under the free trade agreement with the U.S. and Mexico, there are commitments not to pursue free trade agreements with non-market economies without prior notification. Tehran. Iranian authorities unveiled a new mural on a giant billboard Sunday in a central Tehran square with a direct warning to the United States not to attempt a military strike on the country as U.S. warships head to the region. France. The captain of a tanker intercepted in the Mediterranean Sea by the French Navy on suspicion of shipping oil in violation of sanctions against Russia was being held in custody Sunday for questioning. Iraq. Baghdad will prosecute and try militants from the Islamic State group who are being transferred from prisons and detention camps in neighboring Syria to Iraq in a U.S. brokered deal, Iraq said Sunday. D.C. delegate. Eleanor Holmes Norton, 88, the 18-term delegate for the District of Columbia in Congress, and a veteran of the civil rights movement, filed paperwork to end her campaign for re-election, likely closing out a decades-long career in public service. Brazil. Brazil's foreign minister said Sunday it had taken over Mexico's diplomatic interests in Peru following a diplomatic rift over Prime Minister Betsy Chavez, a Peruvian politician who was granted asylum by Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum. And back to the sports page. Steelers McCarthy reach verbal agreement to coach. Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Steelers announced Saturday the club has reached a verbal agreement with Mike McCarthy to replace Mike Tomlin as head coach. McCarthy grew up in the Greenfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh, just a couple miles away from the team's practice facility on the city's south side. McCarthy, 62, is 185, 123, and 2, playoffs included, across 18 seasons, 13 with Green Bay, which beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl following the 2010 season, and 5 with Dallas. His potential hire is just the fourth by the Steelers since 1969 and a marked departure from his predecessors, Tomlin, and Hall of Famers Chuck Knoll and Bill Cowher. All three were largely unknown assistants or coordinators in their 30s. McCarthy is hardly that. We'll take a short break now and return with more selections from the Pantograph from Monday, January 26th, 2026. Please stay tuned.